Welcome to Double Jump, the podcast for people considering jumping into something creative by two people on opposite ends of the creative spectrum. I'm your freelance extraordinaire, Victor.
And I'm not a freelance extraordinaire, Joe. Did you write something down? Am I supposed to be looking at something? We don't have an intro yet, right?
I wrote under the Google Doc where it says double fucking jump. A little blurb there, and I sort of freestyled it a bit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Are we just gonna roll with this?
Let's roll into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Because we're not. I mean, JV Game Dev is like totally not what we are anymore. We've transitioned.
No. Oh, here I am. I'm Joe, navigating a technical job in corporate America while trying to fit in my passion project. We'll work on it.
Yeah. Oh, it needs tightening up. That's where editing comes in. Was that your first time reading that?
No, I read it. Just kind of forgot. I forgot. I'm a little bit nihilist this week. Doesn't matter. Double Jump, man. Yeah. Let's get started on that, though.
Yeah.
That's the name of our next podcast.
Yeah, it is. We're 91 to 3% sure that at this point, I would say, give or take 7 to 9%.
I'm pretty much, I'm 100. I think I'm 100%. Yeah.
You're really on board with it then.
I like Double Jump.
Me too. I mean,
let's say it a couple times for the audience. Double Jump. Let it sink in. Double Jump.
Double Jump.
I think it works because we're two people jumping. Where the double jump embodies something that we've actually done. So we jumped into this podcast and we're double jumping into Double Jump.
Yeah.
One of our like first experiences as friends was playing Smash Bros. Where
you have to double jump.
The double jump is a crucial mechanic. Double jump is like just one of the excellent game mechanics in general. Like think of how many games have double jump. So there's the gaming aspect to it. There's the jumping into the creative world aspect of it. And there's this sort of like this idea that, yeah, you make your first jump and then sometimes you got to jump again. So
that's the trick is that like jumping being projecting yourself off of the air and not actually touching down. So you may be on the come down, but the good news is you've got another jump in the tank to hop you back over.
It makes sense. I'm right there with it. I'm all about it. So we are double jump.
We're double jump, and there's two of us making us a double.
We are. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that. You're gonna have to tune into Double Jump 2 weeks from now, right? I think that's probably when we're gonna be starting.
That sounds like a pretty good timeline. I think it sounds like I said, I made it up. I feel good about it. It was one of our text conversations where Joe was like, hey, it should be something with video games. And I was just like, double jump.
It was a really fun back and forth. That was one of the more like fun back and forth creative things we've actually engaged in for me in this project. Because it was like a real challenge. We're like stumped. We're just like throwing shit at the wall.
Yeah.
What was one that I liked a lot? That we had a really funny interaction. Really, it was just me being a crazy person at 1:30 in the morning on like a Wednesday. It was
Updraft. Yeah.
Updraft. I found Updraft, and then so it was a podcast that already existed, and I was like bitter about it because I liked that name. And then I made a spoof of their album cover. I was like, Downdraft. And I was like on Photoshop Mobile lying in my bed. I spent like a half an hour, got a picture of me and you, and I made Downdraft, the podcast cover. So
the podcast about what, Joe?
Downdrafting.
About farting is what you said. podcast about farting.
That was our tagline because I was making fun of they had a tagline, which is really rude. This is an actual podcast. I'm sure they're nice people doing it. There was no reason. It wasn't directed at any person. It was just sort of internalized anguish coming out at that time. So yeah, Downdraft, the podcast about farts. That's one of our failed ideas.
Yeah, I woke up Thursday morning to Joe having like 5 text messages to himself, one of which was like a really awkwardly tenderly like created Downdraft podcast cover that he made on his phone. Like 1:30 in the morning, it's time. So I was like, okay, he obviously needed that for himself. But it gets stressful looking up podcast names. You're like, yo, that shit sounds so good. And then it's like three other fucking podcasts have the exact same title.
Right. And this one does exist already too. But they stopped. I think if you stop for a year, it's like, it's over. Somebody else gets that name.
Yeah.
So.
And the other ones I found were just second language ones anyway. So not second, like not non-English ones anyway. That's the one that are on the podcast store now. So I was like totally up for grabs.
So we're going to be that. We're going to be at, I got to get a URL and a website together this week. So we're really like, we got something for you all when we launch this new podcast. It's probably going to be doublejumppodcast.com. I believe that's available. We're going to do some reorganization of how we go about our marketing and branding a little bit. We may or may not be on Instagram as anti-Instagrammers, just putting up white text posts, and that's it.
Yeah, we talked about it before. I just don't think Instagram is a good thing in general. I really hate it.
Yeah. But that's fair. That's fair. So we'll keep going with the Twitter game. Facebook is almost certainly one we should have more of a presence on, though, I would say. And that's on me because I haven't been on Facebook in 4 years, I think. So
yeah, that, you deleted social media. Yeah.
Dude, it doesn't even make sense to me anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook. It really helps when you have international friends. It's how I've kept in contact with a lot of people coming into town, especially.
Yeah. So is this the first jump? We're kind of sort of discussing our format still. So I think we're in the middle of the first jump of our recording right now, right?
Right. And the first jump is going to be mainly covering semi-serious topics about the creative process, while the second jump, jump two, is going to be sort of what content we create, what content we're interacting with, what's on our mind, more lighthearted, I would say. Maybe some more banter in jump two as we, you know, transition into the end, because there is no jump three.
Should it be reversed? Should it be like more banter up front?
Sure.
That might be more engaging immediately. I don't know.
That sounds good. Yeah, because he wants to hear people talk about like smart shit at first.
Yeah, you want to be suckered into listening to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and then you're like signed on to our emotional problems, and that's your fault for engaging
with
us.
And by the way, I'm not ready to call any of this smart shit. Like, that was a jump, man.
That was a leap.
It was a jump. I keep thinking about, I'm all over the place, so I'm sorry for that, but that's just my vibe right now. I keep thinking about this this tattoo that I really want to get. I want to get the Spider-Man jump. I feel like it's in alignment with this journey we're going on and just things that have kind of been progressing with me. I feel like it's the right time to get this jump tattoo that I keep thinking about. So
yeah, Joe's thinking about a face tat. He's going to get Spider-Man.
Right on my forehead,
Instead of a black
Spider-Man
teardrop.
Spider-Man just jumping down my nose.
I mean, I think instead of like a black teardrop, it would be cool if it was just Spider-Man falling from your eyes.
That would be great.
That would be pretty artistic. People would figure that out.
I'd be really good at getting jobs if I did that.
Of course. That's so new age. They'd be like, did you kill Spider-Man? Like, what's up with that black Spider-Man teardrop tattoo you have? And you're like, look, you know, some things can't be said. Some things you just have to figure out.
What? Oh, no, man. We're off the rails right now. let's get back to anything that makes sense. I don't know what that is. I got nothing.
Unless you do, dude. Well, you know, the first thing we're going to talk about is this book I read called Behold the Dreamers by Mbolo Mbouye.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm sorry I messed up her name, but it's from, I don't really know the accent. I apologize for that. It's my own ignorance. But I think it wasn't terrible. In any case, it's about immigrants coming to America in search of the American dream, and also about their interaction with a really high-class Lehman Brothers family, actually, during the Lehman shock of around 2009 and their crash. So
wow, that sounds like a really interesting story. What's your What's your rating of it? 5 stars?
I don't, you know, I think our rating system, as I outlined before, should be a little different. I don't like numbers for rating because it's so subjective, and I want to have that subjectivity added like directly into the rating system. Mm-hmm. So my rating system would be, one is skip, sort of. I don't want to relate them to numbers, but at the bottom of the scale is skip. And then next is not my shit. And then the next one is dope. And the next one is holy shit, that was amazing. And I think this is this.
I like that there's curses in 2 of 4 of them.
Yeah, of course there are. Of course there are.
Shit twice. Shit. I don't know. That's part of our, that's part of my word cloud. So I'm glad that we're using that frequently.
Dope. How about God damn, that was amazing.
God damn, that was amazing. Yeah, a little bit more varied. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, we can change that. God damn, that was amazing.
So where is it? It's one of the top two, I would think.
This is pretty amazing. This is to not give you any sort of indication there. It's right between dope and amazing. I'm already making up half numbers. It was dope, dude. It was dope.
What specifically was dope? It was transformative. Would you say that?
Thanks for asking, Joe. I would say specifically what was dope about it was their characterization of both sides of the American dream, especially coming from an outside perspective of the immigrants and then focusing in on their interaction with the haves, you know, sort of the haves versus the have-nots and their interdependence on one another. And then humanizing both sides of that story and that struggle, as well as, you know, evaluating both, you know, extreme wealth and in accordance with extreme poverty, both with, you know, a really competent cadence as well as a compassionate eye for both sides. And, you know, it's raw in a sense. And when I say raw, I mean very honest. And looking at the struggles of the immigrants in America and all of their hopes and dreams, it's called Behold the Dreamers, right? Looking at all their aspirations, their hopes and dreams, and then seeing sort of the embodiment of them as what they're forced to confront every day. And then seeing sort of, you know, that big American dream fall apart at the seams, and then seeing them on the fringes of that, you know, having their own dream fall apart. Watching that happen was just, I wouldn't say it was transformative, but it was a really honest look at the realities of hope versus reality versus just economic circumstances and classism. I don't want to say classism, stratification, social stratification.
Yeah, man. You are on fire right now. I'm just going to let you go until you don't need to anymore. Because that's an excellent synopsis.
Was it good?
I don't know anything. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I'm inspired.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I tried hard.
That immediately got me thinking about, like, you see a lot of creative people start on one end of that spectrum and go to the other. And their work changes completely over that time.
Yeah.
Like, how many artists started with that hunger and then got over full? They got gluttonous and they didn't need that. They didn't need to create the same way anymore. So I think that's interesting from the perspective of people trying to create as well, looking at that dynamic, because there's a certain survival creativity that you have when you're like, you know, in that class of person, you're that immigrant, you're impoverished, you're hungry. That's something that we're exploring a little bit, I guess. It's something that I feel in my job in corporate America. Like, I often feel less creative because, like, my life is pretty cool, I would say. Like, I got a lot of stuff down at this point. Mm-hmm. That's a big change when you hit your 30s. But I don't think I had the same. I think I have to manifest that hunger in myself. I've got to find sort of ways to subsist on that. That are different than when I was 22 and like had no idea if I was ever going to figure it out.
Can we expand on that a little bit? So you're saying when you didn't really know where the structure in your life was going to come from, it was easier to exist in creative spaces. Is that where you're trying to get at?
I would say yes, for sure. Like, I would just go to like like when I was in Germany, that was so whimsy. Like I can never imagine having that experience ever again, because now I consider like every step is like, so many of my steps are like focused on like how I can't like screw up this part of my career, because I'm like 3 years in as a developer, and like the next steps for me really feel like they matter in a way that they did not when I was 22, 23 in Germany. I had a scholarship that was enough to like, you know, I don't know, afford rent. And honestly, my parents were helping me at that point too. So like that stuff wasn't a concern. I was mostly eating like once a day street vendor food, and like traveling around Berlin, like going, I lived in West Berlin, going to East Berlin and like playing board games, like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday with like different designers and like trying to design my own stuff. Like that's so impossible to imagine living that life for me now.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's so much more scheduled. Like I need scheduled creativity, which there's some sort of catch 22 in that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to be creative on Tuesday. Like, but that's not really how that works. Like you could kind of force it. And I'd imagine like the really prolific creators can do that. And at some point they just become creative all the damn time. But yeah, I don't know.
I want to jump in and sort of debunk what you said there. And I say debunk because maybe that's a harsh word, but I think, especially when I was working with my muse throughout the week where I was really reviewing and revising for Pitch Wars, it's about routine and it's about finding the space for yourself to get into that mindset. Mm-hmm. I imagine it's like shooting free throws. It's like, you know, you have to have your little ritual, your little routine to make sure you're going to make the shot. And but you also have to set up the time to set up to the line and go through the motions. And then this is where the metaphor falls apart. Once you're in that routine and you have set aside that time for yourself, and it's important that you're in that mode thinking that, look, this is the time for myself, like from 10 to 2 a.m., you know, every night where I'm going to think about things for myself. Once you're in that mode, it becomes easier to work with your muse and find that true inspiration. But without discipline and without looking into your craft, especially whether you're designing board games, for me it's reading, for me it's writing as well, without those basic disciplines you are going to fall apart, because it's not, you know, the muse is such a flighty thing, you're going to catch it,
right?
But it's going to be a product of you making the time and discipline to be able to catch it when you can, because it's going to strike, and it's going to strike while you're doing the thing that you want to be doing, but you're not always going to necessarily be supremely inspired.
That's an interesting perspective I had not considered. I guess I was considering it, actually. Maybe I didn't have very well-formulated definitions in talking about like when that creativity is going to strike. You're talking about it as the muse, like this pinnacle creative moment.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You show up and you don't account for that to just strike all of a sudden.
Right.
You just account for you being there.
Yeah.
And working on it. And like the more of a routine you have, yeah, that probably makes a lot of sense. I feel like that's actually something that I'm not doing very well right now. I feel very much like in a bit of a roadblock for working on anything creative. I'm being like just totally a consumer right now at this point. I'm playing a lot of games. I'm just like going to see music and like drinking beers. And like I maybe need to like schedule it out again to get back into it.
And I think it's really positive, dude. The month of October was a big month for me to do very similar things where I talked about last time needing space for my creative project, but you just need to fill the well and find your inspiration again, man. It's like your body wants to consume things for a reason. You just can't let that transition itself into escapism in a negative sense. You can't let I don't know why I'm trying to get people advice. I'm just like, I'm really just thinking out loud,
dude,
right now.
No, yeah, of course, but I think it sounds very insightful, so I'm on board with it.
I would hope.
I think other people would find it that way. I think you are a pretty insightful person, so
I'm here
for it. Yeah,
thanks. I'm not sure I, you know, accuse myself of that certain virtue, but I think in certain cases, if you are looking to do something that is very abstract, you just got to start with the basic things you can't control and make sure mm-hmm. you're getting the time for yourself to write. And if you don't feel like you're in a space where you can be creative, switching up your environment, consuming different content, getting out of your comfort zone is a good way to shake things up and make sure that you're in a good headspace to, you know, mm-hmm. work with your muse in general, or just to be happier than you normally would. Get out of those, you know, repetitive systems of thought and negativity.
Right. Makes a lot of sense, man. I don't know. And it's also different. Our worlds are different. So
how so,
it's
Jeff?
It's a different approach. It's a different approach when you're working like, it's a little bit. I'll take this risk, this mild risk. Ooh. I've had some discontent with my work life, for a while now, and so I've been trying to figure that out. And the more you sit in that, it becomes harder and harder to like do something that looks like your work life when you get home, like. That's something I've been struggling with, is like, I don't want to develop. Like, I don't want to develop this game right now, because like I'm developing 40, 45 hours a week. And it's just like, it's not the most pleasant part of my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's such a challenge. I feel like I'm already filled to the brim in what I could output in my development capabilities. So that's something I guess maybe I should have brought up sooner as something I'm trying to navigate, so we could kind of come up with tools to deal with that.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, man. I'm completely on board. You know, if it's as simple as getting you out of the code and into something a little more creative, if you want to, you know, do more art or Photoshop, or for this, you know, you don't have to necessarily do all of, like, you know, all of the web design for our next project. You don't have to exist in those technical spaces all the time. You know, there's a very artistic and sense-based portion of creating a new brand, and you can totally jump on that. And I think we can handle, you know, I've made websites before. We can dig around in WordPress and figure out something that's
right,
not just you
right
on
right.
the back end all
well,
the time.
I don't mind, actually. WordPress is a lot different than what I normally do, so it doesn't feel so bad. It's kind of a nice creative outlet. That's what I've enjoyed so much about this whole like rebrand thing. It's like a different side of creativity that we've got to dive into. And
right.
It's been really collaborative. It's been a lot of back and forth, much more so than a lot of the times when we're just like, hey, we need these game mechanics done over this many weeks. There's less back and forth because that takes time. That's a process. This is like, you know, we're like firing off stuff all hours,
yeah.
You know, and it's been cool. And now, I'd love to, like, I don't know, get into Illustrator, get into like building up that brand a little bit better. Maybe even getting into like music. I don't know. Just kind of see what's out there. We were talking about all that being our intro song.
Our intro theme
for
song.
All the 90s kids. Yeah.
God, it was such, I don't even know how they got that show on the air. That was so good.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It's ahead of its time.
It was great. In any case, yeah, I mean, I guess roadblocks is what we wanted to bring up today, and creative roadblocks. And, you know, even when you're in the process, you know, you're working through a job is something that I haven't done in a long time, but I remember feeling that sense of being, if you're at a job that you're not exactly happy with or feel fulfilled at, then wanting to escape that more than wanting to delve into more of the same systems mechanics that remind you of, you know, your work life. I understand wanting to switch it up. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. We can talk about that later, especially in terms of like the game. The game's been on like hardcore hiatus for the last like 8 weeks, dude.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I haven't opened it. Yeah.
I haven't opened it at all. I've been mainly focused on trying to get fucking book shit done, man. It sucks. It's hard. I didn't get into Pitch Wars. There's that. But
Oh, yeah.
This is a good time if you want to be part of a redemption arc. if you read my book and give me very honest feedback, I would thoroughly appreciate it.
Well, the Pitch Wars acceptance rate is what, 0.5% or something like that?
It was the person I applied to got to pick one. He got almost 300. I applied to 4 or 5, right? I applied to 4 exactly. He got like 300 submissions. The thing is, the people who are more interesting online get more submissions, and those tend to attract fantasy and science fiction writers. So I think maybe the bar is a little higher than if you have a different genre. That is completely unfounded anecdotal evidence. So take that with a grain of salt.
Right, right.
Moving on, but you know, that makes your percentages like, you know, less than 1%. But I think most importantly, the other statistic is that I got no requests for more work.
Hold up. This is one guy reading 300. Well, obviously, that's impossible. He gets 300 books.
No, he gets 300. For Pitch Wars, you submit a synopsis, which is like 250 words. And then you submit the first chapter or 10 pages, whichever is longer, of your book. And then they look and decide. You submit query letter, synopsis, and then your chapter. So they just read that information. Probably about 20 pages to 30 pages of work per person.
Oh my God. There's no way they could dedicate the time though.
15 to 20 person. I mean, they're in better position to do it than agents are, right?
Yeah.
So I looked at it as sort of a dry run for querying agents for my book, because it looked like what it would have looked like if I had queried agents before. I've queried no agents until now. But the more gripping statistic is that I got no, out of 4 people I queried, I got no request for more information. And he, of his like 200 or 300 people, he requested, I want to say like 19 was it? 19 people wanted more material, more information. So there was like 15% of people got more requests for more information. And that's way higher than you can expect in just dry querying agents and editors. So the fact that I didn't get any of those is like sort of a big red flag for me to take a knife to Upville and figure some shit out. So
right, right.
Please, yeah.
Does there come a time when you feel like Upville is in a really good place and you're not hitting that lucky stroke that you need to get it published, and you start writing something else? You keep Upville, like, you keep driving to get Upville published, but maybe you could start working on another project as well. Is that something that you think about yet, or is that farther down the road?
I think it's a little further down the road. I don't think, because I've taken this month to really put Upville at a distance, I don't think I'm ready to give up on it yet. I think this is the time for bold revisions, especially that I'm reading more books now. And the thing that, and this is not an insult to anyone, I think pacing is a really hard thing for people who aren't writers or necessarily people who have like studied writing to comment on in revision and in feedback. So, you know, my beta readers, thank you very much for being a great friend. A lot of them aren't in the writing space, so I think it's hard for them to critique maybe the things that can be the most wrong with my book. But I mean, it can be, I've thought about this a lot. It's like, you know, it's, people want to be nice, but it's, or people maybe just don't understand the language of critiquing. And if you have any questions about that, you know, definitely hit me back and we can talk about the best things to say. But being just very honest about what you did not like and where you stopped reading or where you thought that you wanted to do something else is very helpful information to me. And you will be doing me a big favor by being honest more than you will be saying that, oh, I thought it was really good, maybe one or two little things, you know? So
right.
Upville's going to change drastically in the coming months. Like I said, I'm ready to take a knife to it because I have a version of it that works in one way, but I'm ready to make some really hardcore revisions, and I'm not ready to give up on it yet. I think stage two of the revision process is just going to start a little sooner.
Right. Now, and you said it sounds like writers would be good at critiquing other writers, but it sounded like in the past it's really hard to find that. It's hard to, like, it sounds like writers can be very like insulated from one another. Is that a thing?
I just think it's hard to find your niche and who you get along with. I mean, I guess that's the thing. I'm bad at it. I'm not the person to ask, dude. I'm joined a writing group. I've joined a couple writing groups, but I don't know. And I don't think it has necessarily be a bunch of people. I think if you get one person you really trust who's writing that you think is solid and that sort of mirrors things you want to look at on your own, it's really good. I haven't necessarily found that as of yet. But at another point, dude, it's gonna have to be me looking at my own work more objectively, mm-hmm. and then being able to have not only the confidence but the know-how to make large sweeping revisions and improvements to my own work without a lot of outside help.
Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, like that. That definitely matches my experience looking for like board game designers, for example.
Yeah.
Back in the day, like you look for like you're really seeking out the one or two people that like somehow really mix well with your style.
Yeah.
You're kind of vibing on each other, basically.
Yeah.
Like I think that's what you need. It's helpful. Board game design, it's really great. The difference is board games are such like an accessible. Immediately accessible medium for people that play board games. Like, I have this board game, give it 1 hour and you have most of the experience and like tell me what you think. And like, it's really easy to get good, honest feedback from people because that's not a huge commitment.
Right.
And that's like something that they love to do already. And it's just like 1 hour. Writing's a different experience. It's a different world.
It is. It's asking a lot, dude. And, you know, I've asked a lot of like around 8 or 9 people and I've gotten some feedback. My friend Mike finished reading it. Shout out Mike. Finished reading it last week. Gave me some feedback as well. But you know, I think Upville's going to have to change a lot. Like I said, the big red flag is that no one said anything about it. It just got sent straight to the slush pile with everyone else. And that I think maybe making the appeal of Upville more immediately apparent. And maybe chopping up the front bit a little bit and making... I have like some pretty drastic ideas what I want to do
with it. I'm all about that. I'm all about that in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's something in that thought that is important.
What? Which one?
Making the appeal more immediately apparent.
Yeah. I would go a long way because it's not what it appears to be. Especially when you get into like...
It's very subtle. Yeah, it's really subtle right now, I would say.
Yeah.
Like it starts out just like... I still have problems with like envisioning the world. Like I think you do a good job, but I wonder how much of the world I envision because I envision more or less the way that you intended because I know you. That's something I do think about. So it's not just like a lighthearted superhero romp, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it is good to like separate yourself from that genre quickly. Like I'm more than just that. I'm not Marvel. I'm not DC. I'm not super dark. I'm this other thing. When you're in like a flooded market that is superheroes, but it's not a flooded novel market, superheroes. But we're still flooded with superheroes.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's so important for you. For sure, just distinguishing yourself immediately. Yeah. But
so yeah, there you go. So there you go. So I mean, like that feedback was, you know, prompted but reinforced. So mm-hmm. yeah, like I said, it's gonna be some big changes coming up in the next few weeks. We'll see. We'll check back in. But mm-hmm. yeah, indeed, it's not necessarily. I don't even want to say that it's been a really positive experience. The whole getting my book out there. Shopping it around, seeing what people saying, and then most importantly, listening to what people aren't saying, what I want to have mm-hmm. people say about my book that people aren't saying, and to, you know, figure out how to address those problems by myself and make it just a better work because it's there, man. I really like the idea. I'm not ready to leave Upville quite yet. So yeah, that's where I am right now. Sort of my creative process is the game's been really, really hardcore on back burner, but there's still... I think there's a lot of fun work to be done during the game, and I look forward to continue working on it. It may end up being a couple weeks from now as we mm-hmm. go through our rebranding process. But
so how do we don't have a sign out now, right? We're not doing the clap anymore. Thanks for listening to Double Jump.
We should have like some generic jump noises.
Just jump sounds? Mario? Can you do that? Is that how you catch a lawsuit?
Maybe. It could be how you catch a lawsuit.
Any case, that's why we have one final week of JV Game Dev next week.
Yeah.
We'll hit episode 30. There's something really sweet about that number. That's a really nice milestone, and that'll be the last one. That'll be the dress rehearsal for the next podcast.
Yeah.
So, thanks for listening. We'll let you know when we have this new podcast up. We'll let you know where to go and where to follow us. And I think we're really looking forward to it. I hope you are too.
Yeah. Come along for the Double Jump next time.